Sorry. The terrorist attacks on the United States on Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, were horrific and will be remembered forever. Our prayers go out to the victims and the families who continue to deal with the results of these unconscionable actions. It has touched the lives of all of us, but we remain committed to responding with the American spirit and not allow this tragedy to get in the way of the future of our young people, not only in Sachem, but in all of America. Also, in your thoughts and prayers, please remember Wilbur Ritter. Wilbur was the head custodian at the Winona Elementary School. He served as head custodian at Winona for 25 years until his retirement in 2003. In addition to his service to the Sachem community, Mr. Ritter was a 59-year member of the Sayville Fire Department and served on the Board of Trustees of both the Fireman's Home and the Museum of Firefighters in Albany. Mr. Ritter will be remembered by the Winona students and staff as a kind and gentle man whose gruff exterior belied his tender heart. His caring manner with students and cajoling humor with staff made him a treasured presence at Winona. Mr. Ritter's dedication to others set a shining example for all who knew him, and he will be greatly missed by his Sachem family. The Sachem community will miss Wilbur Ritter. Our sincere sympathies and prayers are with his family. Also keep in your thoughts and prayers all of the men and women in our armed service who are deployed all over the world. Keep them in your prayers that they get home safely and stay out of harm's way. Thank you. Please be seated. Before we call any visitors up, I just want to do a little housekeeping. Number one, I want to thank Mike Boddy for running the last meeting. I was out of town, and Mike was kind enough to step up as vice president and did a great job. So I thank you, Mike. Also, first and foremost, we had a great opening. There's always transportation issues. I've been working in Sachem since 1965, and I can't ever remember a year that we didn't have some kind of transportation issue one way or another. And this year there were fewer than really minor ones, and everything will get straightened out. We're working on it right now, but compliments to everybody who works in Sachem. The buildings look good. The kids had lunches when they came in. Everything was really, really well done. So we thank all of you, Charlie, and your staff. And please convey my sincerest thanks and the thanks of the Board of Education to everyone who works in Sachem. It was a great job, folks. Are there any visitors? None? Oh, my heavens. Okay, let's get to action items. We're on page 2, item C, acceptance of proposal of refunding the bonds. Can I have a motion, please? Rob Schiavo, second. Deborah, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any discussion? 9-0. Oh, you had something?
Yeah, just wanted to just clarify. The term of the bonds is staying the same, correct? We're not extending the life of the bonds. We're just refinancing?
You're still a yes, right, John?
Yes.
9-0. Next item, authorization of refunding bonds. Can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
John Siegel, second, please. Dave Aranow, all in favor?
Aye.
Discussion? Anyone have any discussions? I should ask for discussions first, shouldn't I, before you vote? Well, it's better to vote first, then you can't change your mind. Bruce, can you just... fill in a little bit about why this is a good move for us.
We have two guests here tonight, Bill Jackson and Rich DeTora. They're going to make a presentation on the issuance of the refunding, the purpose, and how this is wonderful news for the community. Just on this two issues that the board just approved, it's refunding approximately $90 million. Maybe if Rich DeTora and Bill Jackson want to come to the front. As you know, the last board meeting, we put money into one of the reserves, and that's one of the key factors that Standard & Poor's and Moody's looks at school districts, including their strength of their business office. We have maintained our AA credit rating, and due to the interest rates being favorable, we were able to save 3 basis points on these $90 million of bonds, which Rich Tutor will explain a little more depth. And we were able to save the community over $4 million over the life of the bond, $300,000 in this school year alone. So this is really wonderful news. It speaks volumes on the strength of the business office and our credit worthiness, the balance sheets that we've maintained. Rich Tutor from Capital Markets has financed over $2 billion this year. And Bill Jackson is the bond counsel from Hawkins Delafield. So, Rich, I don't want to steal your thunder, but if you want to give a presentation.
Thank you. Richard Tortora with Capital Markets Advisors. We've served as the district's financial advisors, I guess, the last 7 or 8 years, and we were involved from the start on the large capital program, the $225 million capital program that you funded. The opportunity that we have before us today is primarily related to two series of outstanding bonds that were issued in conjunction with the large capital program. Specifically, the Series 2002 bonds and the Series 2003 B bonds, Series B. And as Bruce Singer said a moment ago, the intention here is to issue new bonds under prevailing market conditions, which are significantly lower than the rates on your existing bonds. For example, on the 2002 bonds, presently the interest rates that you're paying, and the rates graduate as with the passage of time, so a longer bond pays a higher rate than a shorter bond, you're presently paying interest rates of between 4.375 and 5%. When we issue the new bonds, the rates will be between 3.43 and 4.26%. So the highest rate on the new bonds will be lower than the lowest rate on the existing bonds. The rates that you see before you in the refunding analysis that my firm has provided, of course, are estimates based on the district's current credit rating and based on current market conditions. They can, of course, change. We made some assumptions because we won't be in the market for several weeks. We made some assumptions. We gave the market 10 basis points, or 0.1% movement, which is what we reflect here. So even if rates were to go up a bit, you would still be saving a substantial amount of money. As was said earlier, the term of the new bonds will not extend beyond the term of the existing bonds, which certainly is important. On the 2002 bonds, they presently go out to 2030, and the new bonds will as well go out to 2030. The savings on the 2002 bonds will be approximately $2.1 million over the life of those bonds. The second series of bonds that we're looking at were originally issued in 2003. They're the Series B bonds, the second set of bonds issued that year. They, too, have coupons ranging – coupons are, of course, the interest rate that the bonds pay in the various maturities. Interest rates that range from 4% to 5% will replace those with lower rate interest rates ranging from about 3.43 to 4.26. The savings in refunding the 2003 bonds were approximating to be just over $3 million, almost $3.1 million. So cumulatively, once these refunding bonds are issued, the savings to the district over the next 30 years will be approximately $5.1 million, and that's net of your expenses. We've estimated your expenses to be approximately $220,000, the cost of issuing these bonds, and those are fees to bond counsel, financial advisor, rating agency, verification agent, escrow agent, financial printer, et cetera, all of the fees for the professional team that we'll assemble to help us put this financing together. Questions?
I'm sorry, Tony, go ahead.
Well, you answered the question, was there a charge to do this? And the question is, A, where does the money come from and when does it have to be paid? This is the $200,000 you're talking
sure.
about.
Sure. When we put together the refunding analysis, we included as a cost in the financing your cost of issuance, this $220,000. So the cost that you will incur in conjunction with each of these two financings are going to be funded with bond proceeds. So it won't impact the district's budget. Like, you don't have to come up with $220,000 in available funds to pay fees.
So the fees then are paid. I'm assuming the fees are paid as soon as this transaction is done.
Correct. At
just
closing.
That the payment of them is built into the bond.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Was there another question? Anyone else? Actually, this was supposed to be a discussion item, guys, and we kind of jumped the gun. But just the way that tonight started out is, does anyone else have any questions about this at all?
If I could add something?
Sure.
The resolution before you give the authority to refund more than these two series of bonds. However, under current market conditions, these are the only two series of bonds that we believe are attractive enough for you to refund. And we look for certain parameters. We look for you to save approximately 3% on a present value basis. That's considered to be an attractive threshold for refunding in our industry. If interest rates were to decline significantly, it's possible some of these other candidates, there are three other candidates, they too might be refundable. Presently, they are not. But again, interest rates change every day. We, of course, would not sell any bonds that didn't meet certain thresholds. So working with your assistant superintendent for business and the rest of your financing team, as we go into the market, we'll determine collectively whether or not we should refund just these two series, less than both series or more, depending, again, on market conditions and the level of savings.
Thank you. Does anyone else on the board have anything? Do we need these gentlemen for anything else?
No, just a final comment. Rich, if we didn't have the AA credit rating, which, talking to Moody's or Standard & Poor's, there's only about 10% of the school districts that have the AA credit rating. Would we have been eligible, or how long if we were?
No, that's a good point. One of the reasons why this transaction makes sense, it's pure mathematics. Because you're a highly rated credit, you're going to get considerably lower interest rates than you would if you were, say, a single A credit. Also, because you're a AA, virtually all bond issues in our market are sold with bond insurance. Because you're a AA credit, the cost of securing bond insurance is significantly less than it would be if you were, say, a single A credit. So accordingly, if your credit rating were to change, were to be lower, this issue would not currently be an attractive refunding candidate. It's all the dynamics together, your high credit rating, the fact that the cost of capital, the rates that you borrow at are low, the fact that once you get these proceeds, you can invest them at a high interest rate until the point that we call in the old bonds. The old bonds are not immediately callable. The O2s are callable in 2012. The O3 bonds are callable, in 2013. So the mechanics of a refunding, you issue the refunding bonds in current market. You go out and you buy U.S. Treasury securities, which, of course, are rock solid. They're held by an escrow agent who then takes those monies, invests them, and then pays off the old bonds as they come due. Then on the first call date for the old bonds in 2012 and 2013, respectively, the trustee will pull out a call notice, pay off the old bonds, and they're gone. And then you'd only have debt service on the new bonds.
If I could just add something, the steps that Richard just mentioned are governed by the local finance law, section 9010, and these refunding transactions will have to be verified and approved by the state comptroller's office. So the state comptroller's office will have a look at whatever bonds we issued, will look at the savings reports that are generated by Rich's office and the underwriter that's ultimately selected for these bonds, and they will give their approval. So without their approval, we're not able to issue these bonds. So there is another check in all of this.
Yes.
Regarding this issue and our present and future budgets, we have a debt service in our budget lines. And I don't know if you can answer this or Bruce can answer this. How would this affect our debt costs each year? Well, do we have that number yet?
Yeah. That's an information. We saved in this year, which we prepared the budget last year, based on paying the existing rates, we saved $300,000. Unanticipated. We have unanticipated savings based upon the action tonight.
And future would be approximately the same?
It actually goes up, yeah, because we're going to have new debt service. So if we didn't do anything, because as Rich DeTore was saying, the rates actually go up, we would have achieved a greater savings. That's how it comes to the $5 million over the life of the bond issue. Absolutely.
But the current budget then is also affected by this movement.
Current budget that we're in today, we're going to save $300,000 by what the board approved tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good evening. Thanks for being here tonight. You got lucky. We pulled you up early. All right. Donation of Long Island Recycling, East
President?
High School. Excuse me?
There was no vote. There was
we didn't
motion.
Do it?
It was a motion and a second, no vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. We didn't vote?
It was a 9-0.
I thought we did, 9-0.
We did 9-0.
Yeah. That was, we did the second one, too. Do you want me to do it again? I can do it again if you like. I'm just seeing if you're on the ball tonight. I'm jumping all over the place. All right. Donation of Long Island Recycling East High School. We're on page 3, everybody, item 3. Can I have a motion? Tony Falco? Second by John Siegel. Thank you, gentlemen. All in favor? Opposed? Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Dr. Murphy, this is, if I'm understanding, this is fill. This is not topsoil. This is just fill, correct?
Additional fill, correct.
Additional fill. Does this complete the fill needs for that area?
I think it completes most of it. I think we had some settlement, Mike. Could you explain that a little bit? That after they put the original fill in, I think it settled a little bit, and they had to add some additional.
We got we originally got fill in. It has some big rocks in it. We had some erosion. We're replacing that. But this is a donation for that fill. It's kind of like a rough fill. We're also getting a certain amount of that 4,000 yards will be a, it's called a minus two fill. It's screened to rocks no bigger than 2 inches. And we'll use that for the base of the soil that we'll have to go out to bid for before we put the sod down. And also, I asked him if he could provide rocks. We need a lot of rocks to put around in some eroded areas like the bottom of the bus loop where the water comes over the road and washes away the sand. It gets worse and worse. And we can't fill it in with just sand. We have to use rocks. So he's going to provide that.
The question, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, a couple of meetings ago, regarding the, if I'm understanding, I haven't been back there, but the field, the area that's being filled, drops off significantly after the fill, correct?
Correct, yes.
I mean, can you, is it about 10 or 15 feet down?
I think more than that, probably
okay.
Closer to 25.
How are we going to, and I asked this question, and I don't know if I got the answer, how are we going to protect against erosion in the future? I mean, when a heavy rain comes, I mean, what's going to stop that 50 or 20 feet drop, 20-foot drop from eroding away, as it, some has already done?
I believe H2M is working on a drainage solution to that. For now, we're getting wood chips. We're depositing piles of wood chips all along the edge. That kind of absorbs the water and disperses it enough that with all the rain we had the last, I guess, 10 days or so, we had very little erosion. Only where there were no chips, you could see where there is erosion.
And what they're doing, is it just for that area or for the whole site?
We're getting it is for that whole area where the baseball field is. Also, the field west of that, there's some erosion there. And we're going to get it along the first baseline of that field as well,
okay,
where that's pretty steep.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 9-0. Thank you. Abolition of the technology aid position. Can I have a motion, please? Tony Falco. Second, please.
Second.
Mike Boddy. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 9-0. Creation of school communication aid positions. Can I have a motion, please? Who's that? Douglas? Okay, Douglas Duncan. Thank you, Doug. Second, please. Fred Teneri? Go ahead.
Dr. Murphy, is this basically a title change or a name change?
Yes, civil services did not recognize our technology aid position, so they're asking us to, we had to find a position that really met the civil service requirements, and that would be the school communication aid position. So it is really a title change.
Title change. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 9-0. Approval of Endicott College contract to provide educational services. Can I have a motion, please? Tony Falco, second. John Siegel, All in favor? Oh, I'm sorry. Is there a discussion before we do that? I'm just ramming these things right through, right? No questions? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. 9-0. Thank you. Approval of tuition and payment of Vincent Smith School for student number 30533. Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, a second. Thank you. Why am I drawing a blank? God. I knew that. It's Mr. Scarver, Rob Scarver. See, it's too, being out in the sun too long. Questions? Questions? None. All in favor? 9-0. Discussions and presentations. Press box, who's up?
Bruce says, PJ LJ here? Okay, Tim's here. I know there are some questions about on the board about why we're discussing the press box at this time, since we're putting together a capital projects committee, where the brochure will go out in the next couple of days from the district to all the community residents. But the board back in November of, I believe, of 2004 gave BJLJ, the architect's direction on design and putting a scheme together for press boxes. They finished this job back in January or February of 2005, and we're going to present to the board. It was tabled and tabled and tabled and tabled, and yet Tim and his group still haven't had a chance to present to the board. Tim has been in contact with Bruce, and they haven't been paid for their scheme drawing because they were supposed to present this to the board and have at least this looked at before payment. So that's why we bring it here tonight, because it's been, you know, it's coming up on 2 years that the board gave direction back in 2004, and it's really time to just get some board direction on this, hear what Tim has to say. In addition to this, tonight we got some additional information from Tim, and you can explain that about how the price has gone up in this time period as well. So, Bruce, do you have anything to add on this? Because you've been working closely with.
Yeah, as Charlie mentioned, this has been an ongoing project for the last 2.5 years. Last year, we were going to have a presentation. If you recall, we have two sources of revenue. There was a community assistance grant, $50,000, through Deb's effort and Senator Levy's, at the time, you were Senator Levy, County Executive Levy. And in 2003-04 school year, we had $60,000 approved. So we have $110,000 available. Based on today's cost, as Tim Lee is going to mention, it's almost $275,000. So we have a shortfall. But Tim can explain the difference of the in the interim, we got new bleachers, and the manufacturer of the bleachers has changed, and, of course, the pricing. Okay, Tim. Yep.
At Sachem North High School, we designed a press box to fit on the existing press platform that's currently at the bleachers now. That press box will have a window on both sides to service both fields, the existing football field and the adjacent field next to that. It's roughly 24 feet by a little over 8 feet in length, and then it has two platforms on either side that are roughly 9 by 9, and a second, the roof is a second platform, which they call is a press camera deck with a safety rail system. The press box at East is roughly the same press box, except that there's no existing structure or press platform to install the press box on. So that was added in. And the North High School is estimated at $106,000, whereas East is estimated at $165,000. Now, these estimates have gone up over the past 2 years. Fuel costs have gone up, so shipping is involved. The price of aluminum and steel over the past 2 years has been skyrocketing, so that added to the mix. In the beginning, we were working with two vendors. Since that time, new bleachers have been installed, and one of the vendors pulled out, so it's kind of a less competitive for the other guy because he doesn't want to compromise any existing warranties on the bleacher. He's not familiar with the bleacher from another manufacturer or the structural design capabilities, so he'd rather not get involved. And currently, that's where we're at.
I have, Tim gave me the actual bid specs and blueprints if any board member would like to go through it. But they're basically looking for direction now. I mean, first, I think they deserve to be paid. Here's the proof that he did the work according to the board's direction. But now we're at a standstill on how to move forward. We need, in any event, we need community authority, community approval to do this, because the press box is considered a building. So we would either have to put that in our OS 708 capital projects, or we could make this part of the bigger bond issue that we're talking about. But, and it would not generate state aid. Because they considered separate buildings with no student capacity, we need voter authorization, but we wouldn't get state aid on this.
Bruce, am I to understand that this is, we don't get any capital aid at all on this?
Correct.
Okay. There are some questions from board members, I'm sure. John first, then Tony. Who else? And then Deborah. So, John, you're up.
I think my first question is, if we have to get community approval on this, this $272,000 number is pretty much a guess, because we're not going to get community approval until May of next year. It would have to be in our budget, correct? So this 272 is really a guess. It could be go substantially higher or substantially lower.
Correct.
So we really don't know what it's going to cost at this point. My other question is, and I don't know if it's appropriate, Mike, is if we're going to do any bleacher modifications at North later on, you know, if we do proceed with a press box, will that press box have to be relocated, removed, to do the bleacher modifications, as well as any field modifications we may do at East due to the drainage?
That's a good question.
Bruce?
If we did a different bleacher system, would we have to modify the press box? That's really a question.
Well, when you say a different bleacher system, you're going to replace the one you have?
It's not that far, but it's a potential. Or add it on.
Well, yeah. It could be designed when that bleacher is designed. That could be designed to have, you know, the structure for a future press box, which is basically, I believe, what was done in the past at North.
So realistically, this design that we have a quotation on could and probably will change depending on any new bleacher system we'd put on.
It could if it's not designed with a structural platform to hold the press box.
So it would really have to be done as part of a bigger project with the bleachers and the press box. I assume it would be the same thing for any drainage we do in, for the fields over at East.
John, is your microphone on?
Yes. I assume it would be the same as any drainage work or repairs we do at East. If we had to relocate the press box, I mean, there would be additional costs for that also.
Well, if you relocate the bleacher, yes. Right now there's no structure there at East for a press box, so that was all in the design.
Good, okay. So. Thank you.
Tony.
Yes. So I understand that the structure for putting a platform is already on the North bleachers, correct?
Correct.
It's not on East. So this cost would be, that's why I guess that's the additional cost, would be the structure.
Correct.
Let's take North, seeing that the bleachers are there and they're usable, they've been usable. And I'm just picking two things. Why would we need excavation, backfill, and concrete work for bleachers that are already existing? Just answers at North, if we're just going to put a press box on top of these bleachers.
You do have some structural modifications that need to be done.
Structural modifications to the new bleachers we just put in at North?
To the new bleachers. They were about 2 years ago, correct? Yes.
Well, compared to the other side, which is 50 years old, that's pretty new for us. Yes. So they're going to need structural modification to put the press box. And, again, I don't know if you were there, but my understanding was that those bleachers were built with the understanding that a press box was going to be put on top of it. Bruce, do you remember that when those?
Correct.
So I'd like to find out why now we're going to have to modify the bleachers for at an additional cost for something that was supposed to have been there when we put those bleachers up.
Actually, Tony, J.S. McHugh is the company that put the bleachers in, and they're the ones that Tim is working with. So that is the manufacturer, which if you turn the last page, you see his direct quote. So the manufacturer would have known what he installed.
Well, that's my point. If we paid for a bleacher to accept the press box,
right,
why are we now going to pay for that's structural right. changes to right. put a press box up?
Right.
So maybe we can get that answer from that
right.
From that structural person. Just going back and looking at these numbers compared to a couple of years ago, and I don't know what's going to happen to these numbers if we wait another year or two, but they seem to be going up quite a lot since we, you know. The problem, and John and Mr. Siegel brought this up, this is a problem that this board has faced. We're presented with a $275,000 cost now in September. This goes out, gets approved in May. It goes out to bid sometime June, July. Now it comes in at $350,000. The community only approved $265,000. We're going to be in the same position we were 2 years ago with $265,000 that we can't spend because we can't spend any more money. How do we prevent that? How does the school board figure, you know, we're so far advanced into what we're, when we start to figure out what it costs us, how do we figure, we add in extras? Is that how we do that?
You wouldn't add in extras. What we could do is we can consult J.S. McHugh and ask them for their projection of what it'll cost.
Not to be disrespectful, but I've gone through projections for the last 5 years. Every one of them have been wrong, and they're always higher. Okay, so that I don't believe in projections are a guess. I agree they're a guess by experts, but they're never right. They're always higher. And that's where the boards get into trouble. Now we've allotted so much money, it's more money. How do we do the project? And maybe it's a rhetorical question, but that's a problem that we have. Thank you.
Deborah, you're up.
Now, Bruce, we got, I'm assuming we need voter approval again because we only have approval to spend the $60,000, correct?
That's
so
right.
We have to go for the, I mean, they've already said to us we can put in the press boxes, but it's now predicated on the difference of the costs.
Correct.
Okay. If we put it in part of the XL capital bond issue and we get that referendum out, say, next month, then we could conceivably have these press boxes put in within a few months. I mean, how long will it take to get things rolling?
I think the press box would be easy. Coming up with a list of the 20 million would be a little more difficult. I mean, this is, you know, the other architects only gave us a list of about 10 or 11 million. So we have to research, and as the board appointed a capital subcommittee, that's the time consuming part. You know, this 275,000 would be relatively small in the 20 million project. But coming together, and also there's timelines, you need, you couldn't have a vote next month. There's legal timelines to have a vote. But yeah, that would be an additional, a vote is about $60,000. We can, I don't know, about a month from now, that would probably be a little too aggressive. But, you know, it's the board coming to consensus on what are we going to do for the $20 million. I think that'll be the little more difficult part.
Well, and it's got to be a consensus of where we're going to put this particular expense, either in Excel or capital budget.
Correct.
Any other questions? Doug?
Bruce, is it possible to, for the 07-08 budget, to attach this as a separate referendum?
Sure, that's a possibility too. The community would vote one for the general fund, one for the general fund, and the second referendum would be 07-08 capital projects. We've done that in the past.
Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Personally, I don't think
Deborah,
that's...
Deborah, wait. You're
I'm
there.
Sorry.
John's up.
Just as a follow-up, if we put the press boxes as a part of the $20 million number that we've been floating out there, we're not getting state aid on the bleachers, so it's going to wind up costing a community. I mean, we were talking about $20 million and overall not costing the community any money. Now we're tacking on projects that we're not going to get state aid on. So ultimately now we're going to look at starting to charge the community for some of this project. The whole beautiful thing about the $5 million Excel aid, if we pocket it with the other state aid we'd be getting back, is it wouldn't cost the community money. So I just, you know, want to make sure is that a true statement?
Right. John's absolutely right. We would be lowering our building aid ratio on the entire project. So instead of 76.6, state would look at it and say, you got $20 million. They would knock out what's not aidable, and they would lower our total percentage, call our bond percentage, on the entire project. That's really how it works. He's exactly right.
Any other questions?
Bruce, can you use Excel aid for this type of capital project?
I don't think the state would allow
doesn't
a press
meet the
box.
Requirements. Okay.
It doesn't meet. There's four criteria for capital the Excel age. This wouldn't meet one of their definitions.
Deborah.
All right, so we cannot put it in the XL capital bond issue.
You no, can. No.
Okay,
the XL aid is only $5 million.
Yes.
Rich DeTore is going to talk in a few minutes how we could parlay that into $20 million. That's the list that the architects brought to us. we can put the press boxes of one of the other 30 items, but that won't generate additional aid.
Right.
Well, either XL... I mean, either the state is going to accept this type of capital improvement, or they're not.
The state under no circumstances.
The entire, say the $5 million, the entire XL project or the capital improvement projects have got to meet this criteria by the state in order to be
correct. This
is within the XL capital bond.
And this would not qualify. It's
so we can't put it in.
If we were only going to do $5 million of projects and only use the Excel aid, this would not qualify under that. But that was not how we were going to – we were not going to use $5 million for $5 million of projects. We were going to use the $5 million for a debt service payment.
I understand. With regards to the referendum, I don't think that's going to go over too well with the community because they've already approved it once before. You know, they're going to start asking questions. Why is this back out on – you know, for community referendum again. So I think we have to think long and hard on how we're going to, you know, express to the community how we're going to get this particular capital project done. We have the $5 million. That equates to $15 million in state aid, giving us a total of $20 million. We only have $17 million in capital projects to complete. Is that correct? Isn't that what we came up with?
Yeah, it was closer to $10.5 million. But there were a lot of
I remember looking at, you know, everything that was presented to us, and I do recall that figure, $17
million. That included the projects for this year, which was funded out of the 06-07 budget.
Out of the budget, right. Okay.
So the remaining projects was $11 million, but there were many items on there. The architects didn't have a cost, like the east drainage. You know, that could be $1 million.
Okay, so we actually have additional funds. I mean, we're not going to use the entire $20 million.
We don't know yet.
I wouldn't say that.
We're in the process of we're putting together the capital project committee, but we have to provide this committee with the information around the district of all the types of needs. So we've Ed Miller, Mike Bergen are meeting with the head custodians and principals to try to see what are the needs in the building, what are some health and safety, what are some instructional areas.
So we're coming up with more projects then.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
Any other questions? Now, this number, if we wait until May, this could be over $300,000 without a problem, correct?
Could we have to
put a contingency on top of this, because by the time we go through the process of, of bidding it and so on, there could be other issues. I don't know. Personally, I would not be comfortable doing this unless it was approved by the community. If the community wants it, they understand everything about the press boxes and what the costs are. If they're for it, I have no problem with it. But, you know, just lumping it in someplace, I have a problem with that. That's my personal opinion. I mean, you know. Yes?
I think the community's made it very clear that they want these press boxes completed along with the bleachers. And, you know, the longer we push this out, the higher this cost is going to get. And the community is never going to see these press boxes. I think it's time that we make a decision. We know what the community wants. We just have to get these additional funds. And I think, you know, we should make a decision on which capital, you know, project or capital bond that we want to put it in. Make a decision now, not be waiting.
All right. Is there anything else?
We just what,
go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, no, not on this conversation, but just to pay BGLJ for the work they've done. If anybody'd like to see the specs, and because they complied with the board request at the time, so I believe we owe them their architectural fees.
Yes.
I'd like, Bruce, if you can get me an answer with about that.
Tim.
Why the cost? Thank you.
That's right.
Anyone else? What do you need from us tonight? Now, you want a leaning?
It's just like a leaning. It's not really a vote because it's going to come through as a warrant. But just
when you're before I'm asking is, do we want to move ahead with these press boxes? Is that it? We can't do that. Just to pay the architects. Okay. Rob? Oh, I'm sorry. I should start all the way at the end, right? I'm sorry. What's your name again? Yes. I'm sorry. Danielle, what do you think about paying the architects for doing the designs? What's the other gentleman? Ed? Okay. Board, here we go. Rob? Pay him? David? Yes? Fred? Yes? Mike? I'm a yes, 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 yes. Okay, pay them. Yeah. What else do you... We're giving you half a check. If the project goes through, we'll give you the second half. Deborah.
Are we going to get a leaning on which way we're going to proceed with this project?
Deborah, what we're going to do is we're going to take this information, we're going to share with that capital projects committee when it comes together, and then they're going to make some suggestions to the board eventually, coupled with the administrator recommendations at that time, and whether it gets in the project or not gets in the project, that'll be a board decision later this year. We're not going to just take... they spent a lot of time putting these designs together. I think we're going to have to take a close look at them and see what they did and see what fits in the whole scheme of the $20 million. As Bruce said, you can put it into the capital projects, but it's not aidable. So there's a cost to the community spread out over the life of the bonds. But we're going to try to keep it as small as possible and close to zero. I think that's the goal. Correct, Bruce?
Okay. Next, the aviation program. Thank you.
Paul, do you want to set the table for this?
Jacques LeBlanc and John Karametkis, come on up.
We've basically, at a prior board meeting, had some questions asked about the aviation program, and there were some concerns about the program, the cost, and whether we should be having a program here at Sachem, or there are some alternatives, but we might want to describe what the aviation program is about, a little bit of the history, and Paul, you've been working with the...
thank you, Charlie. I just want to introduce, joining me this evening, to my right, John Kalamakis. He's been our aviation teacher since the beginning of the program in 1991, and Jacques LeBlanc, our department chair for the secondary technology program. They've both been obviously very much involved with this from the beginning, so they'll be filling in a lot of the blanks and giving you some of the history. And John, certainly as a teacher, can talk a little more about, you know, the kids in the program and what their future endeavors have been and so forth. But there is a memo that was out on the table out front, and each of the board members have this as well, which kind of summarizes some of the questions that were asked previously. And if I could just go through and highlight a few things, and then I'll ask Jacques and John to add a few things as well. Really, in terms of history, the aviation program came into our secondary program back in the early 90s. At the time, we were looking at ways of reducing our BOCES costs, and we explored several areas. And we brought back five different programs, some in technology. We had the carpentry program that we've been running in district since that time, the aviation program, our child care program over at Gate Lot, the computer network technician program, and also out of the art, our advertising and design program. Since that time, we've been offering BOCES-like programs, although as John and Jacques can talk about, you know, we think we offer a different program than what BOCES is doing. The BOCES program is basically a two-year program. BOCES describes the second year as being optional, but you know, a number of youngsters would attend that program for 2 years if they want to complete the training, whereas our program is essentially a one-year program, and we'll get into cost a little more later. But at this time, based on what was approved at a previous board meeting in terms of the flight school portion, the flight school is costing $5,424 per student next year, although, again, that will have to be based on the number of hours that the students actually train, plus, of course, the teacher salary, since it's our own staff member that's involved in it. The aviation program, students that are involved have the opportunity to earn a technical or trade sequence to help satisfy their graduation requirements. Specifically, the program has received technical endorsement from New York State. It's recognized by the state, and the students that complete the program will have that special endorsement on their diploma. The program runs for three periods in district. The flight school portion, of course, is outside of the school day. Currently, we have the program running at both Sachem North and East. When we reconfigured the district and went to the two 9 through 12 high schools, the idea was to replicate all of our program offerings. And the plan was to do that. Last year, our enrollment was down a bit, and we felt that in light of the contingency budget, we really couldn't run it in both buildings. So we shuttled students from the one high school over to the other building. For this current year, I should say, we were doing that because of our enrollment of 17. For the year just completed, I beg your pardon. And for the current year, I forgot that the school year started already when I said that. We have 41 students involved, so we were able to run the program at both Sachem North and Sachem East, and John travels between the two buildings, providing the three-period instruction in both of those locations. We have 25 students currently enrolled at North and 16 enrolled at Sachem East. In terms of the cost, what it actually cost the district, as I mentioned, it's a three-period block of time, which means that from the teacher point of view, John is teaching a six-period load, which is one above the typical teacher load. So it's certainly, you know, the full-time teacher salary plus the benefits and the additional stipend for teaching a six-period, which is a $4,500 contractual stipend. That's the teacher cost of it in terms of our actual district staff that's involved. And as I mentioned earlier, the board recently awarded the flight school bid to Mid-Island Aviation at a cost of $5,424 per student. That figure is based on 40 hours of actual flight instruction. Students are given the opportunity for 30 hours of dual instruction plus 10 hours of solo instruction. Now, I'm going to ask John to get into this a little bit because not every student takes advantage of all 40 hours of instruction. So even though with 41 students, at 40 hours, the total cost would be over $200,000. Typically, we've seen that sometimes as many as half of our students choose not to complete the training and, or even the solo portion of it. John, maybe I could just ask you to address that portion of it, the hours of flight training.
Good evening, everybody. In the past 16 years, typically what happens with flight training is the first month, everybody's all psyched up, ready to go. And what happens, you know, in that second and third month is some of the students begin to realize that it's not easy, that it's difficult.
Excuse me, John, would you speak into your microphone, yeah, please, a little bit, so the people behind us can hear, too.
Okay. What typically happens is in the beginning of the school year, everybody's gung-ho, wants to learn how to fly, get their pilot's license. But what happens, you know, as the course progresses, is many students realize that it's not easy, that it's difficult to get a pilot's license, and some of them will opt not to continue. That doesn't mean that they can't be successful in the program, and by the fact that they started the flight training and made the decision for them that it won't fit into their lives is also a successful thing. And typically what happens is some students will use many of the hours, and it varies from year to year, but many will not. So the numbers that were presented is the absolute highest number that it would actually be. To give you an example, if you want to take a look at last year's program, which was, you know, very successful, 11 out of the 18 students soloed. And that means that they would be entitled to the 10 additional hours. If you don't solo within that first 30, you will not get the next 10. Okay, so 11 did solo and were entitled to the other 10 hours. Anybody need any clarification on that?
So the maximum expenditure, again, if every one of our 41 students this year would complete the 40 hours, would be $222,000. Based on our past experience, and again, this is a bit of a guesstimate because we don't know at this point how many students will, you know, utilize all those hours, the likelihood is that the expense will probably be somewhere between $170,000 and $200,000 for the flight training portion of the program. So if we use that figure and we use the teacher salary and benefits number of $100,000 just as a round figure, it brings the total program cost to $300,000, which is a little over $7,000 per student. Now, again, keep in mind that it's a three-period course, so if you divide that figure by three, we're talking about an expense of about $2,400, you know, per period per student. The cost of a typical class, and it's extremely hard to make a comparison here because obviously this is a very specialized type of a program, but if you use that same kind of an average salary figure and working on the fact that a teacher teaches five classes, you're talking about $20,000 per period, 25 students, about an $800 per student course for a typical class. But again, very difficult to put a real dollar figure on every single course that we do offer. Let me just turn this over for a moment, if I could, to Jacques to give some historical perspective. I mean, Jacques was obviously the person very much involved back in the early 90s with researching this, and he can give you some background as to why at that time we looked at doing this in-house rather than continuing doing this through BOCES.
Good evening, everyone. Back in 1986 is really when it started. It was when the Regents Action Plan was put into place. It proposed sweeping changes through education, and part of those changes required the students to take more academics, which at the time, especially in an eight-period school day, was forcing a lot of students out of BOCES, that they no longer had the time in their day to go there. That was one of the changes that happened. And another change that happened was that in, technology at that time was called industrial arts, and it made a switch to technology. And the idea was that we needed to attract higher-level students into technology programs, where before that it was more of a traditional shop and industrial arts-type program. And this happened throughout the state. I was asked to look at, in the late 80s, as department chairman, to shape a vision of what the program would look like at Sachem. And I was looking at and asked to look at the BOCES programs and what programs we sent the most students to. And it was also at the time when parents were feeling that was a very viable option for their son or daughter, and now they couldn't go there. What could we do? And I went, spent a lot of time, probably over a year, visiting all the programs. And the four that we sent the most students to was aviation, computer repair, it was called at that time, the carpentry program, and an automotive program. I felt after reviewing that we weren't able to do the automotive program, but I thought we could do the other three. And it was attractive to the community at that time because many of the students, of the higher level students that were going to go on to be commercial pilots or be part of the aviation field, did not want to go to BOCES. Number one, they didn't want to take that time out of their day. In an eight-period day, they basically had to go to afternoon BOCES, which was also then taking them out of sports and clubs because that has to come back later after the school day is over. So with that, it took a few years to put it together, but around 1990, we brought these programs in-house and originally started out this aviation program on a two-year basis, matching exactly what BOCES did. BOCES obviously was very, very unhappy with us and with myself because we took a lot of students that were going to BOCES and brought them back within the school. For a much better, I believe, experience and high school experience, they stayed part of the high school. They weren't leaving on a bus and being removed from all the good things that they felt they would be missing by going to BOCES. It became very successful. We looked at reducing the time of the program to 1 year, and part of that was because after reviewing the BOCES program, the students only fly four times in the first year. It basically, they're at computer simulators or at a computer itself, and it isn't until the second year that the students were able to fly and then be able to solo. So we were able to reduce it within to 1 year. By moving that flight time out of the day and into after school and at night, which then freed up more time within the classroom, we were able to reduce it down to three periods for 1 year instead of four periods for 2 years. Any questions? Yes.
I have a couple questions. Actually, the first one being, I see the enrollment from 2003 to 2007 has gone up. I mean, actually this year it's gone up from 17 to 41. Any idea why there is so many more students willing, interested in taking this?
You know, I can't figure that sometimes. I looked at the computer network technician program, which was always oversubscribed to, and this particular year we're only running it in one high school because it dipped. It's very difficult to understand why. I don't know, John, do you have any... You want to add to that?
A lot of the enrollment comes through word of mouth of other students. So whether that play, I think that's a big part of why the numbers are up, that students in last year's class might have talked it up a little bit more. But it is difficult to track as to the exact reasons. This year was the largest program that we've ever had. And I can't understand myself. I try to teach the same every single year.
Now, I see last year's enrollment was 17. What was the final number? I mean, was this 17 the people that originally signed up for the class? Did the 17 students go through the entire year?
If I'm not mistaken, we might have lost one in the beginning who changed their mind about aviation like the second day. I had the number actually down as 18 for last year.
Okay. Now, are there prerequisite courses for this program, you know, math, science, or is this just an elective class anybody could take?
John, basically it is an elective class that anyone can take. I did a little homework on the level of math and science that some of the students are taking. Of our current, we have 41 students in the program for this year that just started the program yesterday. We have 19 11th graders, 22 12th graders. Of our 11th grade population, if you look at let's just focus on math and science for now, just to get a flavor for where the students are in those areas. Of the 19 11th graders, we basically have four that are in advanced level math courses, which for an 11th grader would be like a pre-calculus type of a course. Six are on grade level taking their regular Math B Regents course, and there are nine students who are either taking Math A or a general type of a course, like a general geometry. On the science side of our 11th graders, we have four that are in advanced science. Of the 19, there are three in physics. We actually have one 11th grader in the program who's in an AP science course. Three others are on grade level in chemistry, and 12 of the students are not taking science at all. Part of the concern there is because they are blocked out with three periods for the aviation, there are only so many periods in a day, and students have already, in many cases, satisfied their science requirement. At the senior level, we have 22 12th graders involved in the course, 11 are in Math 12 or Analysis, which is basically the fourth year of math. Three are in the AP Calculus. Three are below grade level, which means they completed their Math B, and five of those seniors aren't taking math at all. They've already satisfied their requirement. And again, on the science side, you have seven taking either an AP science course or physics, and the remaining are either taking a science elective or they've completed their science already. But essentially, it is open to all students, you know, who elect to take it.
Okay, now I have a question. I understand we have the simulators and computers in the school, correct? So has any thought ever been given to making this course that's offered every 2 years, the first year being a one- or a two-period course where it's like an introduction class, introduction to aviation, see if the student really wants to stick with it. I mean, because, you know, I got to tell you, $2,400 a period seems like an awful lot of money for a no-prerequisite class, and we don't know if the student's going to stick with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if we made it a every other year program, have introduction to aviation as the prerequisite, if you will, and see if the student wants to, you know, move forwards, you know, it could benefit all of us.
Yeah, we do have a an aerospace course, which is a little bit different, but it's a bit of an exploratory half-year course. But I'll let John address it because he's most familiar with the curriculum on it.
This might be somewhat unrelated, Mr. Siegel, but maybe if I give you a little bit of background as to what last year's class, where they are today, you might get an idea of what some of these students are doing. If you're looking at last year's class, we have three students who are still currently in high school. Two of those students, we deliberately slowed down their flying last year because they were not going to be 17 until this November. These two, we slowed down. They're currently flying. One of them called me this morning and completed his night flight last night. And the last I heard, they both plan on taking their flight test right around their birthday in November. The other student who's currently in Sachem is undecided as to what he wants to do for a career, okay? We have five students of last year's class that are going to Vaughan College of Aeronautics to study air traffic control. Many of those students were involved in the internship program at MacArthur Airport, where they put about 100 hours into the control tower and at New York Center. And five students are going to be going to Vaughan, and they're very excited about studying air traffic control for a career. Two of the students are doing aviation-related things for the Air Force. Two have enlisted and I think are in boot camp right now. One student called me this morning is in Embry-Riddle. He completed the pilot's license in June and is in Embry-Riddle for a professional pilot. Two of the students are in Dowling, both studying professional pilot. And one student is in Farmingdale studying airport management, who has also completed the private pilot's license. We have two others that are going to Suffolk Community College to keep expenses down, but plan on transferring into an aviation college and are currently saving up to complete their pilot's license because they did not get the pilot's license in the allotted time, and are going to save up the money and try to finish on their own. And then I have two students that are also in Suffolk but are somewhat undecided as to what they're going to do for their career. And that rounds out to the 18.
In doing some of our research, we discovered that in a neighboring district over in Smithtown, they actually run two half-year courses. Their first course is called Flight and Aerospace, which sounds from the description in their handbook very similar to the aerospace course that we offer, the half-year course. And the second course they offer, and also a half-year course, is called Fundamentals of Flying. Again, just relying on their description in the handbook, they feel that if students complete those two half-year courses, they would be prepared to take the written exam. You know, the question then becomes, what about the flight portion of it? So if we were to go to a model like that, and again, I'll ask John to kind of fill in some blanks here, but if we went to a model like that, which would help prepare the youngsters for the written portion, I don't know if in that period of time if they would be prepared for the other portion of the actual program.
Quite honestly, that is difficult to say. The only thing that I can tell you is that in the course, since we began it in the early 90s, we've used the Jeppesen-Sanderson training system. And this training system is really college level. Embry-Riddle uses it, Farmingdale uses it, and we have used it and will continue to use it. It's a complete training system consisting of textbooks, study guides, workbooks, flight training manuals, interactive DVDs. One of the reasons that, you know, we currently have former students who are in air traffic control flying for the airlines, both males and females, people in the Air Force doing aviation-related stuff, is because of the nature of the program. I teach a theory or a concept, and the student can then apply this theory first on computer simulators and then in the actual airplane. And as a teacher of the program, they get juiced up when they actually can get a real flight. So there is value to some flight in the program. It really, when they come back off their flight, you can see the enthusiasm to continue in the ground school and, you know, give it their absolute best. You know, the program is not an easy program. And, you know, it takes some nurturing to push these young students through this thing. But the activity portion seems to be very important at this time.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the BOCES option, so to speak. If we were to move back to a BOCES option rather than offering this in district, and again in the memo I provided some documentation about what the cost factors would be. BOCES tuition for all of their programs is now $10,272 per student. Ron Sachs, our business administrator, has been in touch with BOCES to talk about what portion of that is actually aidable and so on. And it's interesting that regardless of the program, that's the tuition that we're being charged. And, you know, my first thought was, well, aren't they charging extra for the flight portion? And the reality is they're not, which probably means that they're overcharging for certain other programs to make up that difference, because certainly they would be losing money on that. But the information we got back is of that $10,272, a little over $3,000 of that is not aidable. So of the remaining $7,000 at our usual 58% BOCES aid ratio, the actual cost of sending a student to BOCES for aviation is $6,161, again, once you factor in the aid. Now, again, it's a two-year program. The second is optional. The first year would prepare students for the FAA written exam, and I think Jacques pointed it out that students would have limited opportunity to actually get up into the air. The second year, the students really start to get more of the flight training, night flying, instrumentation, and so forth. So some students would certainly opt to go for 2 years. Others might only opt for the first year and decide, you know, I don't want to pursue it, you know, after all. Clearly, fewer students would be involved. For some of the reasons that Jacques pointed out, even historically, you know, students wouldn't necessarily want to make that commitment to go to BOCES because of the timing of the schedule, the PM BOCES. Students get back, you know, later than their normal eight-period day, that type of a thing. But the $6,161 per student cost as compared to what is costing us over $7,000 now, so, you know, certainly there is a difference there, and that would be something that we would have to weigh.
The board asked a couple of questions early on about this a few weeks ago.
Right.
One of the things they wanted to see with the BOCES program, does the BOCES program, do we have to, if we went with the BOCES program, we could go for one year or we could go for 2 year. Or you don't even have to go to a BOCES program at all because we're not obligated for
That's
any
correct.
Child who wants to go off to BOCES to go to BOCES. Some of the concerns that was raised to even have this meeting was we're spending $200,000 on the flight training. I think that was really what initially brought some concern to the board. I didn't realize that, you know, we're having three periods of training per day, that these kids are in class for three periods. It's an awful lot of instructional time to have only 65% of the kids go on in solo last year. You know, based on that numbers, you're going to have 14 kids in those classes for three periods, and they're not going to end up with flight.
Right.
I would say that the goal of an aviation program is to get the kids in the air. And if you're not getting in the kids in the air and they're not going off, because if it's a career training that they – why bother with the flight portion if we're having kids going off to the management, the air traffic controller, and you're getting very few kids. And I remember the survey that we did last year on this. We got very few kids who were actually going for the flight training. It's just an awful lot of money. And I spoke with Jacques and Johnny about this last year, that the key is, and you brought it up tonight, Paul, again, that the board should know about, is not all the kids who are taking this are taking the math science and the computer science background and this advanced type of coursework that they would need later if they're going off to college to have that great foundation to be a true aviator, because they need the physics. I heard a couple of people going taking AP calculus and things like that. Those are the kids who are going to actually go on and be pilots. We better serve some of these kids if they're continuing in the math program and the physics program and the science program and computer science here, so they do have a strong foundation so they can get into those colleges, because those colleges are going to look at the transcripts and say, you know, what has this kid been doing? It's nice to get the flight training, but you also have that background for the future. And I would have just liked to seen a lot more kids actually going on to college to take aviation than the other sequences that they're involved in.
I mean, clearly,
it's a big expense.
When a student makes the commitment to that three periods, it certainly limits their other choices of the other things they can take in school.
That's right. If it's a true career training program, if we send kids off to BOCES and they go to the plumber's trade, most of these kids are going to go off and be plumbers. I don't think that's the case here with aviation, that these kids are going off to be pilots. Some of them are going into the management and getting a taste of it. But we also, I think, are obligated as a school district to give the kids a taste of other things. If three periods are taking up it and we're only getting 65%, that means 35% of the kids are sitting there for three periods and they're not taking advantage of that solo. Last year, those kids, those 17 kids, had four periods of aviation. We reduced it from this year. So four periods, they couldn't make it. I don't know how – I think we might have a bigger drop-off with three periods. So that would be a lot of kids who are not getting – what I would expect you get out of aviation, that they're all flying and they're all going to go on to a career, because you mentioned the trade sequence. And if it is, truly is a trade that we're spending $200,000 for flight training, you'd want to see kids getting up in the air safely. That's just my point. I just wanted to make sure that the board understood that. This is just some of the notes that I was taking along.
Can I just add something to that,
sure,
Dr. Murphy? The expense that you're looking at, though, is for if every student took every hour. So that expense of that is not going to be that. So that's the first part. And the second part is it's not a pilot training program. We don't expect every student that goes into that program to be a pilot. And that's part of the reason we structured the bid, that those students that do go on to be pilots, they're getting that flight training. Those other students that might be air traffic controllers that we're putting on internships at MacArthur Airport, we're not paying for that flight training. So it's unfortunate the way the bid, because you're looking at a number from last year that was at the end of the year that was a bottom line of what we paid out. Now we're looking at an estimate, because that's the only way the Mid-Island or any of these companies would bid. This is, well, what if everybody does fly? We know historically from 20 years that that's not going to be. So at the end of this year, we need to look at that amount. And I'm positive it's going to be quite a bit less than that. And I think even less than, Paul, what you were estimating, just from the numbers that we know. And I think
the board was concerned, Jacques, is that you're having three periods a day. Last year was four periods. There's a lot of time being spent for that, that if kids are – you may be able to give the kids a taste of it with a simulation class, couple that with maybe an aeronautics class, and there might be a sequence that kids get able to choose. So they're still able to have some time in their schedules to maybe choose that a computer science course or an art course or something else, so that we're not limiting kids to make such career choices at a high school level when
Many people would say that, there was a big movement for a long time of hands-on education, that you don't teach someone to tie a tie by telling them how to tie a tie. You show them how to tie a tie. And those students that are sitting in that class, they may be learning more science than a class that they're sitting at a desk listening to a teacher lecture all day long. That actually getting involved with weather and aeronautics and the planning of a cross-country trip is extensive math. That just because they're not in a class doesn't mean that they're not getting a science or math that may help them with their
But the transcript that's going to get them into college is going to be missing that. When Paul brought up, and I looked at the what the kids were taking too, you only have about 25% of those 41 kids taking the challenge in math and science courses in their background, and that's a concern, especially if they're going into this field.
And some of these students, like the students at Vaughan College, can get 12 college credits for being part of that program. So there is a benefit there.
Sure. That's all.
We have a couple of questions, so let's get to it. Deborah, do you have a question?
I really would just like to make a statement, and that's I truly cannot justify this program to the taxpayer. There's other programs out there available, the BOCES program, which I hope will, you know, look into, and some of our children will take advantage of. There's also the Civil Air Patrol, which is right over here at MacArthur Airport. I truly cannot understand, and I can't accept, with all good conscience, expending $300,000 so seven children can fly around Long Island.
Not spending that amount of money.
That's how much we have for this program, Chuck, $300,000.
That is if every student flew 40 hours, and we've demonstrated that every student does not, and what we're estimating is that cost would be maybe $150,000. I haven't heard the number of
$150,000. That's an astronomical amount of money. I would rather take that money and put it into another technological course. That's my personal opinion. And
thank
that's
you,
how
Deborah.
I'll feel next budget season.
Doug, you had a question, right?
Yeah. You said that several of the students will opt not to continue with the flight portion of it. So for the classroom, for the three pairs that they're in the classroom, what exactly happens when you say you have 11 kids that are still doing the flight and you have the other half of the class who's not doing it? How does that work exactly?
Well, first, the flights are not during the class time. The flights are after school, but I'll let you.
This is really an aviation career exploration program. It's not a program to make airline pilots. And because it's an aviation career exploration program, we provide the students with ground school and private pilot training, which is kind of a foundation in aviation. The students who are at Vaughan in air traffic control were successful in the flight portion of the program. And if you talk to air traffic controllers, if you do have flight training or a license, you actually are a better air traffic controller. So we never made the claim. This program in Sachem never was built just to build pilots. We look at various careers. We have guest speakers. We have military that come in. We have air traffic controllers in the field that come in. We have former students who are airline pilots come in. Okay, and we expose these students during those three periods, in addition to the coursework that we do, to a variety of aviation careers. And what you will in fact find typically is many students will come in with one idea that they want to do in aviation, and quite often by June will change their mind and go into another area of aviation. And that's the program works for that reason. Okay, it exposes them to a variety of careers, and they can take a look-see throughout the year while they're working towards something.
The internships that are available to the students, how exactly do they qualify for the internships? Are they qualifying for the internships because they're taking this pilot course, or could you have a kid who, say, is taking the aerospace course? Would that kid be able to qualify for these internships, or do you have to be in the flight training as we have it now to be able to get an internship as, say, an air traffic controller?
I can't answer whether or not the FAA would take students from an aerospace class, but to answer your other part of the question, the way that we select the students is we first of all have them write a position paper as to why they want the internship, okay, and then I do an interview. And after the interviews, I make a decision. And in the past, the FAA allowed a maximum of six students. So, you know, this year's, if the FAA is still going to work with us, this year it's going to be a chore because we do have such a high number.
In your opinion, without the class, would these kids be able to compete for these internships? Or is can a class be made without the flight training to prepare the kids so that they have an opportunity to take these internships, is maybe a better way of saying it.
I really don't know.
Yeah. There's another question. Fred Teneri, and then Rob.
Okay. I have several questions. One of the questions is, how many schools in the general area have this type of aviation program? I know you said Smithtown has a program. Is there any other schools around?
Probably not.
Okay.
Smithtown has a one-period class.
Okay. The second question I have, I am happy that we have a diversity in programs, because that's one of the things we're trying to do at SACHM here, is try to, you know, build up a background and help students in different areas. I am concerned, though, of the jump in numbers that we have, and my concern is what's going to stop us from having 80 children next year enrolled. I think we're going to have to do something of some sort of ceiling on it, maybe a prerequisite, or have a certain amount of children involved, and maybe have choose children. Don't just at random say yes. Anybody that wants. So I have a niece that went through the program a few years ago. She did it just because she wanted to fly. She thought it was fun. Here we're spending $7,000 on a child that's going to go up and fly. So that kind of student, I wouldn't like to see in a program like this. You know what I mean? So in my mind, we have to have some sort of. I just don't want this to escalate to 80 to 100, 120, because these numbers are just a little crazy. I don't think we should get rid of a program like this, because I think there's a lot of students that would benefit from it. But I think we need to do something, especially with this year's enrollment, to at least contain it a little bit. So somehow we have to figure out some sort of containment. And that's basically the main thing I like to say. And the other reason, the other thing is, I know Fred Costi personally, and I'm a little disappointed he's not involved with the program. I don't know what is involved with the surrounding, why he's not involved. All I know is that he put a lot of time and energy into this program, and I'm a little disappointed that he's not really involved. He's not here to really speak up on that. I do like the program. I think we, not necessarily get rid of the program, but I really would like to do something in containing it.
There was, Fred, you made some good points, and the aviation program is unique to SACHM. It's much different than anyone else has, and because we had so many enrollments today, and I can't say this for sure, but I think this is a little bit of a correlation. And Deborah brought a point up in the springtime about technology courses getting canceled. I think we had so many kids ending up taking this, and it's three periods a day, that there was a drag on some of the other technology courses which they would have taken, because a lot of these kids are technology type of kids. And that department had many courses that didn't run this year, or didn't run as many sections, and I think some of it is because they went towards the aviation. I'm not sure if that's true, but Jock was as disappointed as anyone else about the enrollment in technology last year. But I think a great number of them, the 41, and it was near 50 at one point at the beginning of the summer, went to here, and rather than being in, I think, electronics, it's hard to say, but they had a lot of closed courses, that's for sure.
Rob?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. I actually work for BOCES, not Eastern Suffolk BOCES, Western Suffolk BOCES, so I have pretty good knowledge as to how our aviation program runs. It is a two-year program. The success rates are tremendous in the BOCES programs. I think the way it's devised, by putting a lot of the academics up front, a lot of the sciences, before jumping into the flight training, tends to take the students that are real serious and moving forward, and the serious that just took it as an elective, okay, and maybe give them another opportunity in another program. My experience with the BOCES is that a lot of students don't make it through the flight training program because of the amount of mathematics, the amount of science. And the alternative for a student that is not successful in the aviation program, per se, in the flight training, is they have the opportunity to maybe participate in the aviation maintenance program. And I think that's what happens a lot. I know that their numbers start off really high, and because they put a lot of the academics up front, it tends to take this, like I said, I don't want to use the word weed out, but it tends to take the kids that are less serious about the program and put them into another program. I know you had made mention about the technical regents endorsement that the students receive on the diploma. Now, obviously, in order to receive that, the program must be certified by a national organization. Is that the FAA? Okay. There is an exam at the end of the year that the students take to successfully pass it. Does the course go through site visitations from the FAA on a regular basis?
I wouldn't say on a regular basis, but the FAA does come and visit. And they keep track of our numbers. In the 16 years that we've been doing it, I would say, if I had to estimate, about 80% of the students qualify, to take the FAA exam. And in 16 years, we had 3 failures.
Okay. Earlier, you'd made mention to the fact that, you know, the number would drop from if we did start sending our students to BOCES. But in all honesty, I think that's really making a true commitment. A student that's going to take 2 years out of their 11th to 12th year out of their high school career and attend the BOCES really shows me that the person absolutely positively, career, oriented as far as, participating in an aviation program.
The feedback that I got from students, though, Mr. Scavo, mm-hmm. was that they looked at it as, I think it's, is BOCES still 4 periods each year?
It works out to be, I believe, 2 hours and 30 minutes per session.
Right. So in the past, it was 4 periods per day per year. That's mm-hmm. 8 periods plus travel. Mm-hmm. So in talking in students in the past, just generally speaking, mm-hmm. they were frustrated with the amount of time. And the other thing was they didn't want to leave their campus. You know, mm-hmm. that those are the two issues in general discussions with students in the past.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add that the student that doesn't go to the BOCES is often the higher level student who doesn't want to leave the building to spend that time, miss the other things that are going on. And our students get weeded out from the math and the same kind of things because you're following the same FAA procedures, and before they can get to that point to fly, they have to go through the same thing. So those are the students that are not flying. We're not necessarily sending them to the mechanics part mm-hmm. of a program because we don't have that, and I'm not sure that's the best thing for them to do necessarily, but it is another option that BOCES has that we don't have. But I think that we may exclude a group of students that we're only going to get if they're in-house, that they are planning to go to college for that program, and they're just not willing to give up all those other things to leave the campus. In my experience, I really have seen that.
Mm-hmm. Paul, that's a good some good points. What is the commitment to go to BOCES? What can you take here at Sachem, then when you go to BOCES? How many periods can you take here, and how many at BOCES?
Basically, you're only in the building 4 periods.
You're here 4 periods?
You're here 4 periods. You'd have the travel period, and that afternoon BOCES session basically brings the students back about a little over an hour after our normal 8th period dismissal time. So
take 4 periods of
class.
You can
still take 4 periods in the building, yeah.
Okay. So it'll be basically your social studies, English, and then whatever else you're going to take.
Okay. We do, by the way, currently have 3 students in the aviation mechanics program. So, we do have some of our students that are in that BOCES program this year.
Danielle and Ed, do you want to add anything to this conversation? There's a microphone coming your way.
As a matter of fact, I do. A lot of the points that I was thinking of have already been addressed. I know Dr. Murphy mentioned being able to round out college applications, and I feel that if the course was maybe shortened to maybe take away the actual flight aspect, then they would have the opportunity to take other classes because it would be in a shorter period of time to take the extra math, the extra sciences that would help them be more competitive in the college application process. That was really the one main point that I had.
Danielle?
I think that the program is successful how it is, but I also think that not having the hands-on experience of actually flying a plane and having to give up the extra time to get the hands-on experience might invite other students who have an interest in aviation to just take a 1-period class or, something where they can see if they would still be interested to pursue a career in that area, but not have to give up the 3 periods. So still see if, kind of test out the water, see if they would want to pursue anything in that career.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from any other board members? Doug.
I agree with what's been said before here. To me, I think we have a good program, and it is helping kids, but like Fred said, the number of kids, I don't want to say weed it down, but I'd like to see some sort of introduction class where they can learn what it's all about, and then from there, we can choose those kids that are real serious about going to flight school and will put the time in. So instead of having 65% of the kids solo, you know, we have 100% or 95 of them do that. I think that we need to find some way to get the kids that are serious about it, but also at the same time, provide an introduction class to give kids information on the different careers involved. So I think that it seems like everyone is pretty much saying the same thing here.
Could I just add something to that, Doug? Your idea of weeding out, you know, might be a good idea, but there's no way to weed out somebody to find out if they can solo or not. Okay? It's the hands-on that will determine whether or not you can solo. You have to go through the process and do your first takeoff and get involved with the radio communications. And there's a lot going on in the airplane. You have to be multi-talented in the airplane. A lot of people's intentions, they want to be a professional pilot, and it ends up being that they just can't do it. And some of these are academic-oriented students. So there really is no way to weed out that portion of it. If you want to weed it out, you know, due to science or math, that certainly the school district could do. But not for the solo part. You got to try to solo and then see if you can do it or not.
John, have you had youngsters who have gone through three-quarters of the year and said, gee, I don't want to fly? What happens to a youngster in that situation?
Well, the program is working because it's a career exploration program, and their intentions for that first three-quarters of the year was to finish, and something happened. Some students get sick in the airplane. They didn't expect to throw up in the airplane. But after the fourth or fifth time, they're saying to themselves, hey, this isn't for me, you know? So I think that the program is doing its job, even if that student doesn't make the choice to continue the flying. But many of those students will go into another area in
that's
aviation, and that's what we're looking to do in a career exploration.
So a youngster who's been through three-quarters of the year decides they don't want to fly for whatever reason,
right,
has other options,
yeah,
as far as – I'm partial to this program because I remember when it came over from BOCES. We tried to bring as many programs back as we could back then because of cost savings, you know, for the district. Plus, the main thing was to keep the youngsters in the building so they could take part in other things. As far as prerequisites and so on, I mean, that's something that you folks have to really explore and come up when you come back to see us again, you know, be able to say to us, hey, look, this is what we're doing to screen kids who get into this. But it is a career exploration, and I know it's been really successful. I can tell you one other thing on, firsthand. I remember when I took my son to college and we sat in the auditorium for orientation, and the dean of students says, I just want you to know that most kids change their majors at least 3 to 4 times before they graduate. Which, so I put my kids on the 4-year program. I said, after that, you're on your own, guys. But kids do change their mind, and that's natural. And they'll do that when your kids go to college. For those of you who have youngsters that are that age, you'll see that they go in and they want to do something, and then they end up changing their mind a couple of times as they go through. But, I think you've done a great job with the program. I really think it does, it's unique. There's no doubt about it. And, one way or another, I'd like to see us save this and be able to give these kids this opportunity. So does anyone else have anything? Thank you very much. Thanks for your time tonight. Did I miss somebody? Mike?
Not a question, but can we just be updated in the enrollments if they change?
Of this
yes.
Program? What's the direction now? I mean, yes, for the discussion. I didn't know what the direction was from the board for the future. Do you want us to look towards creating a prerequisite for it?
I think that was the overall, if I'm wrong, you can stop me. My from what I heard is I think folks are saying, let's see if we can get some kind of a prerequisite or some kind of a screening method to see that youngsters who do get in this program kind of follow through with it. It's hard to say. There's no way you can guarantee that a youngster, you know, halfway through the program or whatever, the first time they get in that plane, you know, you're going to have that, you know, that margin of error. But I think if there's a way of screening youngsters or some way of saying, hey, look, if you get into this program, maybe they have to know right up front what's involved in it, you know, and maybe the first thing they should do is, you know, see what one of these airplanes looks like firsthand. And, you know, maybe there has to be some way of going through this so that a youngster who gets in there is committed to it. I think if you sign up for three periods a day, you're pretty committed to what you do.
Well, I had the question. I mean, we can do some prerequisites, having John take them up there and give them a spin in the plane and see if they get sick or not. But that's just one way. But I just wanted to know if it's a career exploration or the trade. Is there a difference? Because that's a new term that's been thrown out. Are we exploring it? Is there a different way we could set up a sequence to explore different avenues and then have this as one of the avenues? I'm not sure if the way you're looking at it is there's the flight, the aviation. I think many kids, when they look at that description in the course catalog, they get charged up for what you said is the flight part. I'm not sure if many of them are taking it because they're looking to explore careers such as the air traffic control or airport management or mechanics or and such like that. I didn't know what the board is looking towards, because if not, it's going to be in the catalog next year, and I just don't want anyone to get upset when we put the flight training as $200,000 for next year. So that's what we're looking for, direction from different people here.
We have two more people who want to speak. Deborah and then John.
No, my sentiments are strongly committed to reducing this expenditure. So if we want to change the program, I'll be very happy to listen to any tweaking that you'd like to do, but I would like to get rid of that flight portion of that program. It's just too expensive, and it does not, it's not done for the common good of the entire district. Not enough children are participating in it to possibly justify spending this kind of money. However, you know, listening to the different suggestions from my colleagues, continuing with an aviation program, you know, may be better suited for the taxpayer dollar.
John?
I just want to say, you know, as a career exploration of $7,000 plus per student, I think it's a lot of money just to explore if they're going to want to proceed with this. And that's why I want to get back to what I said originally. You know, why can't we do an introduction the first year and offer as a second year the flight training? I mean, this will really, you know, could potentially scale down the number of students that actually want to take this class. You know, I really have a problem spending over $7,000 for a three-period day for somebody who wants to try something out. You know, I'd rather save that money and use it towards the core curriculum, if you will. You know, I can't see proceeding with this course as is.
Thank you, John. Mike?
I think the whole issue here is, you know, the flight training and the sticker shock of flight training. And I just asked Dr. Murphy if he can give us the budgeted amounts for the 03, 04, 04, 05, and 05, 06 years and the actual amounts that were spent. And I think that might help equalize some of the thoughts on how and which way we might want this program to go.
And those costs will be considerably less than this year, because we went out to bid on a professional service this year as a result of many of the state audits. So that we can't just give it out to, you know, X person to say, hey, this is, you've been doing it for all these years. And that's one of the reasons we bid this out and put an RFP together. And, you know, John and Jock were integral in helping put that together this year.
I think, Micah, what you're asking to see exactly how many kids actually took, how many were enrolled and how many actually took the flight training?
No, I see the enrollments. What I'm asking for is the budget amount, the cost for that.
The line and then what the actual cost
was. What we went out in the budget with and then what it actually cost when all said and done.
That's reasonable, sure. Is there anything else? Okay, thank you, guys. Okay, we're up to Excel Aid. I almost sent you two home. Come on back.
And before they come, I just want to let the new board.
I thought you were going to solo on this, Bruce, speaking of flight,
Excel. Just the new board members know that maybe Rich and Bill Jackson could come back. We use Wall Street attorneys because we don't use Ingham and Smith because it's such a specialized field, municipal bonds, the financing of that. And Hawkins Delafield, primarily that's their main business. Well, 95% of our legal business goes to Ingham and Smith, but we call in the gentleman from Wall Street because it's such a specialized field, just for the new board members, of why these gentlemen here more often. But Rich and Bill, if you want to come back, as we said a few months ago on the Excel Aid, we're eligible for $5 million. One of the allowable purposes is for debt service. As we mentioned, our debt ratio is 76.6%, approximately three quarters. If the last page in the folder is the calculation, which Rich DeTora verifies that we would be eligible, the very bottom number is $20,577,000. And as Tony mentioned earlier, I think one of the mistakes we made in the past bond issue, we didn't put in enough contingency. So as we've experienced, every architect that's been here, we know that their costs are off. So I think just as a start, before the gentleman talk about the specifics of the debt service, that we should build in a contingency. We should get, the expert's advice, 15%. So when the actual bids come out, because we might be doing this work for 2 years from now, 3 years from now. And as we learned, if we don't protect ourselves, if we come up with a list of $20 million, it's not going to be $20 million in 3 years from now. So the way we protect ourselves, and I would recommend, is that we build in a contingency up front. We could pick the number, but 15%, 20%, we'll get some reasonable. And then we protect ourselves. So even if the community, the subcommittee comes up with the list, we don't do or we don't authorize $20 million worth of work. And I think that's the only way we could protect ourselves in a year from now. So no matter what the architects say, we know what we are protected. That's just my opening thoughts. But Rich DeTora will now talk about, there was questions a few months ago about, how is this possible? And, it seems too good to be true. And Rich will go over the calculation. And actually some districts, because they don't have the amount of money that we're talking about, they are going to vote this month. Islip and Lindenhurst, it's much smaller amounts, so it was easy for them to get the ball rolling. Because they didn't want to lose this method of taking the Excel aid and turning it into a larger bond issue. But because of the size of ours, I don't think that that's going to be possible and the way we established it with the subcommittee. But anyway, Rich, if you want to give to the board a deeper understanding, they got the basics, and if you heard earlier, they understood it. But why don't you go through the calculation and...
Sure, thank you. Good evening again. Just a quick background. I might have missed this when Bill and I stepped out for a few moments earlier. What Excel is all about, it's a new program included in the governor's 06-07 budget that would get approximately $2.8 billion in additional aid to school districts in New York State. It's no surprise that the lion's share of that money, $1.8 billion, will go to the city of New York. The balance of it, $800 million, will be distributed to all school districts in the state. And what you need to do is identify a project that qualifies for this Excel aid, and then issue debt. Once the debt is issued and you start spending the money, you're reimbursed by the state. The Excel aid that's listed on the state aid website for Sachem Schools is just over $5 million. However, if you're creative, and we like to think we're very creative, we came up with a way that you could leverage the $5 million. If you used the $5 million to pay for what is otherwise your local share of a capital project, the balance of the money, it's a multiplier, would be paid for by your state aid. So, for example, your state building aid ratio is 0.766%. If we deduct 0.766 from 1%, we come up with 0.23%. So if we say this $5 million Excel aid that you're guaranteed to receive represents your local share of a debt project, when we add on top of that the portion that would be paid by the state, three-quarters or three times basically what you have to pay locally, the state will pay, we come up with a bond issue of $20 million. The interesting thing about this, and I suspect that Bruce has said this to you, we expect fully, and the experts at the state have verified that this will be the case, if indeed you authorize a $20 million issue and you issue $20 million in debt initially as a note issue and you subsequently spent that money on a project, the state would pay back their $5 million piece. You would then issue bonds for the balance, for the $15 million piece, and there would be absolutely no impact on the district because the state would pay the principal and the interest in full on the bonds that you issue.
Okay, that was my
It does sound too good to be true, but yes. Occasionally the state opens the door for opportunities like this. We're of the opinion that you should capitalize on it, certainly. While Bruce mentioned that a number of our clients are already moving forward and voting on this on smaller issues, he's probably not aware we have a client upstate New York that their multiplier is 95%. So they're going to do $120 million financing, and it'll cost them nothing. And that's up for vote, I believe, next month. So this is the opportunity. It's certainly a good one. It's one we would encourage you to take advantage of. I'm sure there are other school districts that are just looking to borrow the amount of Excel aid, the $5 million, but they would leave a huge opportunity on the table. It's our job to identify those opportunities for you and make sure you capitalize on them, which is why we're here tonight.
Questions? Tony?
A couple of questions, please. And I don't know if this is let's start with the $5 million. Bruce had spoken about contingency in the package we decide on to build in a contingency amount into that to cover what may happen 2 or 3 years down the road. We spoke earlier about a project that would not get state aid because of that type of project. Is contingency aidable?
Oh, sure. As long as the project is aidable, if indeed you build in a contingency, it should all be aidable as long as it's all spent on a qualified project.
Okay, so I guess, 20%, I'm sorry.
I guess the actual answer is, Tony, if the architects are right, we wouldn't spend the contingency.
Yeah, well, we know that's not going to
So
happen.
If we spend the contingency, that means it's an aidable project.
All right, but,
so that's the true answer. Right. If you authorize $20 million, you only spend $18 million, the state's only going to give you $18 million. So if the architects, you know, knowing the history, they say it's going to be $18 million, it winds up being $20 million, we at least could do the project. That's the purpose of the contingency.
Well, but then that brings up a question. If the numbers are correct and we put a portion of it for contingency, then we're not going to really spend the $20 million. We're only going to be spending the $18 million. Is that correct?
Right. Well, just like the Winona roof. The architects estimated it was $1 million. It came in at $1 million. We could have budgeted $1.2 million. Then you only would have got aid on the $1 million. That $200,000 would have been leftover money. Well, you don't get the aid on what you don't spend.
But I'm trying to understand it as if I was sitting on a committee and had to pick projects worth $20 million.
We wouldn't give them that authority. We say you have to pick projects for $18 million.
Okay, that's my point. We would get the contingency part of that would not be actual projects.
That's correct.
And then if we don't use the contingency, we'd only get the $18 million.
That's correct.
Okay.
If I may add one thing, when we draft a proposition to send to the voters, we will ask the boards to conclude what is known as a board statement. That board statement will include projects that are wish list items, things that did not fit in the case here within the $18 million. However, if there is money left over at the end of the project, and in some projects it is the case, you can then tap into that list of projects and finance them. I guess to answer your question, if those projects that are on the secondary list are accelerable or eligible for building aid, you would receive the full amount of the aid.
That was my next question. So then we're not limited to the $18 million. We can add on another $2 million in projects on a secondary list. And then the question I have as far as this list, when it is made up, let's say there's 10 items on this list. Once the bond issue goes out and these lists are publicized, are we bound by that list?
Yes, you are. The architect's report becomes the Bible for the project, and it is very difficult to deviate from that list. That's right. Why we have you produce a secondary list of wish list items. We have had districts in the past where they've only come up with a first priority list, and then there is money left at the end of the bond issue, and they come to us and say, well, can we now issue bonds to fund other projects? And the answer is no.
Well, my concern is not for money left over. It's concern of within this maybe five-year project of whatever it may be, we run in down the road with a major cost that we do not have the money for. Let's say another major roof goes down, and it's another $1 or $2 million cost to the district. We have no way of using that Excel money that was proposed, was approved by the community to put that in. That has to be done separately by either another bond or within a budget. Is that correct?
Excuse me. As Mr. Jackson said, you can only fund projects that were envisioned to be funded when the proposition was put before the public. However, occasionally what will happen is there won't be enough funding available because time passes and prices go up, costs go up, so you accomplish 90% of what you envisioned.
What about not using the complete $5 million? Are we bound by a timeline on this $5 million? Could we bond out $4 million and hold that million for 3 years down the road and then bond it at that point?
We're not aware of any limitations on the Excel aid which would require you to spend it in this budget. However, we have seen the few districts who have proceeded with projects authorize the full amount of the Excel aid.
Okay, thank you.
Deborah? And then John.
So in that instance, we would just have to keep going out every 2-3 years for a bond referendum from the community, right? I mean, that's the worst that could happen.
If you seek to authorize new projects not included in a prior referendum, yes, you would have to go out to the voters again.
Okay, and Bruce, I also wanted to ask you, is there any other unaidable items in our wish list?
On the list that the architects already prepared, most of them were aidable. The turf fields would be questionable, but you would have to do something related to the building, related to the instructional facility, and then as an incidental cost, the turf fields couldn't be. If you just did turf fields by themselves, that would be an unaidable project. Most of the things on the list were health and safety, improvement of facilities. Those are all aidable at our aid ratio, the 76.6%.
John?
A couple questions. What's the cost for doing this? I mean, obviously, there's a bond cost that the state's not going to reimburse us for.
All of your costs should be included in this $20 million number, including the cost to the professionals that help you issue the debt, et cetera. We would sell these bonds competitively, as we do all the district's debt, and there would be fees payable at closing, but they should all be included in that $20 million number. So when you come up with your list, included in that should be, you could probably borrow $20 million and pay costs of $50,000, let's say, to borrow $20 million. That would be part of the cost that would be covered in the total authorization.
But the cost for your services and to sell the bonds and such, they're not aidable?
They are.
They are at 76%?
Yeah, the cost you incur to issue debt is aidable over the same time period as the debt that you issue.
The major cost is not them, it's the architect. The architects get 8%. They're relatively minor in the fee schedule.
Now, another question I had was, excuse me. The Excel aid projects were very clear-cut in what you can do and what you can't do with this money. Now, do those requirements match what the state's going to provide us aid on? I mean, we could do a project that they give us 76% on. If it doesn't fall within the Excel guidelines, if you will, I mean, we're not going to be able to recoup that money.
You want to make sure that your architect crafts a program that clearly fits within the Excel guidelines. And also, once it's approved, you send your plans and specs up to New York State. They have to approve your plans and specs, and that will be verification that indeed the projects do comply with the Excel guidelines.
Okay, and I see that I know all projects aren't aidable at 76%, and I see that's why you had the 95% factor down here?
Right. We don't assume that that it's going to be 100% aidable.
Okay.
Correct. And so when we put these scenarios together, just as we did with the refunding scenario, we'll always err on the conservative side. And so we'd like to think in the refunding, you'll get more money than we projected, and we'd like to think on the Excel aid, you might do a bit better than this. But we'd rather you be pleasantly surprised than rudely shocked at once the issue's solved.
Good. Thank you.
Tony.
Yes. Excuse me. Last question. Regarding the – you brought up a point about being approved, let's say a $5 million or $20 million bond issue being approved by the voters. The architect draws these up, sends them up to the state. There's a questionable cost or a questionable project in that cost. Let's just use Turf Field as an example. The state says, no good, that is not Excel aidable. Is that now out and cannot be recouped?
Well, that project might come off the list, but that goes to what Bill had said earlier about having
the
A list and the B list. Yes. So then you move up the next item on the B list.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Is there any advantage to not going for the full $5 million?
None that I can imagine.
I can't imagine not doing it either. I mean, really.
It's also, the state is depicting this program as a one-time program. They don't think they're going to repeat this next year and the year after. Oh. So it's this pool of money, $800 million. A portion is allocable to all the school districts in the state. It's kind of... It shouldn't be exhausted. There isn't a chance that you'll lose it if you don't use it. But it's something we'd encourage you to get to quickly where we know the interest rate environment and we know what your aid ratio is.
Got to go for the gusto right away. The other thing, too, is I'm assured that you would work with our public relations firm because we're going to have to make this as simple as possible because if this is a no-out-of-pocket expense to the taxpayers, we have to be really clear about it, and we have to do it in simple terms so that everybody understands it. So this is going to be a major undertaking as far as being able to explain this.
Is there going to be any arbitrage created when doing this borrowing and then for the district?
Let me just raise one other point first. There will be a minor expense to the district because in order to be reimbursed with the Excel aid, the district will have to show it expended the money. So there's two ways you can do that. You can expend the money from your general fund and then seek reimbursement, or you can issue a short-term obligation, a bond anticipation note, demonstrate to the state that you've spent the money. There'll be an interest expense associated with that short-term borrowing. To depict it as a zero cost to the taxpayer, I think is slightly misleading. There will be minimal interest costs to the taxpayer.
Well, we have to know all of this up front because that's something that we started out saying it's not going to cost anything. Minimal is something, and we'll have to get the word out.
And let me add something on that. And Bill is right. There would be the interest expense on the $5 million note that you would issue that you would then be reimbursed on. The gentleman who asked the arbitrage question. Under current market conditions, if we borrowed that money in a note, we could probably borrow it. We sold notes today at about a 3.45% rate. Currently, you can invest those monies at about 5%. And as long as you spend them within the arbitrage rule spend-down requirements, you could indeed earn arbitrage and use that to offset the cost to the district. But he's right. There would be that interest expense would be a cost to the district. I'm sorry? A portion of it. It's through this. And what arbitrage is, of course, if indeed you were to borrow the money at, say, 3.4% and invest it right now, let's say at 5%, you would be earning about 1.6% above your cost of capital, and that can legally be used only to offset the cost of the borrowing, so to pay the interest on that note. You would be making money on it for a period of time. Now, whether you would make enough to totally offset the interest expense if we said you borrowed $5 million and it was at 3.5%, you'd have about $175,000 in interest expense in a year. Would you make that much in arbitrage earnings? Perhaps, perhaps not. So so I'll restate. There would be some, I suspect that would be your only cost.
Yeah, I mean, I think we would just caution against selling this project as a zero cost. I think there's going to be a minimal cost, and as you move further along in the process, Richard Tortora's firm will be able to quantify for you what that cost will be.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Deborah.
You know, and another small concern I have is the state is notorious for telling you they're going to give you something and don't do it.
All the reason to borrow the full $5 million as soon as possible.
Yeah, the only thing, Deb, I would say on Capital 8, the state has never reneged. I mean, once they committed, and because it's statewide, and as Rich said, it's billions of dollars in New York City, they've never reneged. If they said that they're going to give us on the $230 million, was almost 90%, that would be a major shift of their thinking to renege on capital projects. No, not on capital projects. It's never happened. No.
Any other questions? I think we can let you safely leave now, gentlemen. All right? Don't walk too fast in case we have to catch you on the way out. Thank you very much for your help. Visitors, if you're going to speak, we need 3 minutes, please. Are there any visitors? Sal Nicosia. I've heard of him before.
Good evening. I just want to give you an update, which I feel incumbent upon doing as the chairman of the Legislative Committee, the Sachem Legislature, which this board judiciously created last fall, and we started in January with our meetings. Mrs. Sinkowski was the board liaison to the committee. I happened to be chairman. At the first blush, we got 30 people to participate in the process of what we were trying to develop, namely to enhance the political persuasions of this community in Albany, in Washington, in the county, and so on. It was a big endeavor, and as the spring started to come, our numbers dwindled because of other commitments. But basically, we did develop an agenda which was viable, and we want to give you that particular kind of thrust here. During the course of the meetings, we developed a strategy that we're going to invite people from the legislature, the state legislature, which we're being elected this fall, many of whom are running primaries this Tuesday. I wanted to sidebar that. And basically, I also tried on six occasions to contact the Spitzer office to see if he would come to this district at any time from January on, and each month I continually called his appointment secretary, Maureen Turner. We got to be very close friends during that 6 months, but she begged off to say that he had other commitments. I won't mention which ones they are because I did monitor every place he went by reading newspaper articles about where he was and what he was doing. He happened to be in Patchogue for an affordable housing speaking engagement and so on. But he didn't see incumbent upon coming to a district with 47,000 voters, people from that live in middle country that we were going to articulate in contingent districts here. And I told them we had about 250,000 people that live in this community within the Sachem Bourne boundaries. And I'm a little disappointed because I know that Mr. Faso, who I know personally, and Mr. Swazi, who is known personally by one of the members of our committee, was ready to come. But I couldn't let them come without at least getting Mr. Spitzer's okay. So that's where we are now, and I felt that without him there, it would not be a debate. As you know, that Tuesday is an important election. I hope our school district will avail itself in the schools to sort of alert people in the community to have the children and the parents be aware that the bowling booths will be in the schools and that maybe our schools, principals, and leaders can facilitate some kind of dialogue of getting input because it is on a calendar like it is, and I thank you for that. So basically, I just want to know that how we're going to proceed, because I'm going to have our first meeting on Thursday of this coming week, and hopefully contact these people that were on the committee last year to see if they'll come, and see how maybe some of the people from the PTA will send building representatives from the PTA, from the legislative committee that they have, to our meeting and sort of see if we can develop a broad strategy for the coming year. So that's where we are now, Mr. Pomera and members of the board. I congratulate the two young people here, Mr. Christian and Daniela, who are going to do a great job for the school, and I had the privilege of meeting them today with Dr. Murphy, and I wish them well. God bless you.
Thank you, Sal. Any future agenda items? Next meeting is September 19th at 8 p.m. right here. Can I have a motion to adjourn to executive session to discuss personnel items? Who is that? Tony?
Second.
Second by Mike Bai. All in favor? Thank you. Thank you all for being here tonight, folks.